Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, the help of God, I know I can be strong.
4 years ago, I was quite blunt and said that Joe Biden had lost it, that he had reached senility, and that it was obvious that he could not compose complete sentences or put thoughts together and articulate them. I have found it interesting all of my adult life to be exceedingly observant when around people, because I enjoy trying to ascertain how quickly they process information, how accurately they assess what they have seen and heard, and how articulate they can be at conveying the lessons that are learned. I was horrified 4 years ago watching Joe Biden run for president. And what I said 4 years ago is that it's not entirely his fault. You can be in your 70s, even 80s, and still be quick of mind. Today, I think my mind works better than it did 40 years ago. I'm able, with the information that I have garnered over that time and the understanding that I've developed, to be able to process that which is important more quickly and more assuredly, leading to a more accurate result faster and more often. So we don't always deteriorate in a progression with age. But Joe Biden had a very serious surgery. I don't know how many years prior to running for president, but I think it dealt with aneurysms in his brain. And at the time, they knew that it was going to cause this effect, and it was going to significantly advance his cognitive dysfunction. And it was apparent 4 years ago. Now it is so obvious, even the most stalwart Democrats are saying, oh, my God, this is a disaster. We need him to step aside. When Kamala Harris, who I assume has the IQ of a flea, recognizes that it was a disaster, you know it's a problem. Unfortunately for Joe Biden, there's only one thing worse than having lost one's mind, and that is not being smart enough to know when it's happened. Something occurred in Israel yesterday that is so telling of what the nation has become politically. As I've shared on this program, I have come to the conclusion that the progressives in Israel are a complete washout, that they are exceedingly counterproductive, and that Israel would be far stronger with a lot of them gone, or at least silenced. Le Pen is one of those examples. He is got dental floss for brains. In the current configuration, I had shared that I thought that Gantz had gone from a credible appearing individual that had concern about Israel to a pathetic, self-serving brat that is nothing but a sideline crybaby who has no appeal whatsoever, zero charisma, the inability to motivate or lead people. And that now has become obvious. He is nothing but a self-serving political whiner. That still leaves us with some very interesting and I think exceedingly negative leaders as part of this coalition. And I speak specifically of Gallant, who is the Secretary of Defense. They don't use that title, but Minister of Defense, who I think is an exceedingly dangerous man. Not because he's bright. I think he's also has a substandard IQ. Not because he's articulate, because he clearly is not. He has no stature either. But he is exceedingly divisive. And he is divisive in the absolute wrong place to be so. And I think for his political fortunes, he would willingly sell Israel under the bus. And then you have a man that I think is weaker still, maybe the weakest link in all of Israel, Halevi. He is the head of the IDF. He was criticized by someone that progressives in America, this present administration, despises, Bezalel Smotrich. He's a minister of justice. I actually think he's minister of finance, and Levin is the minister of justice. They criticized him. They said that his rebuke of political leaders a couple of weeks ago publicly was ill-advised, particularly when the IDF failed so miserably on October 7th. And they went off and as far as to say that when he was trying to criticize the political establishment as opposed to accepting blame himself for the IDF not responding to copious threats from the Fakistinians that they were going to attack, that everybody and their brother knew that it was going to happen and that the IDF did nothing to stop it. And then when it occurred, they were asleep for 8, 10, 12 hours, failing to respond intelligently. Under those circumstances, the first head to roll had to be Halevi's. And so Smotrich, yesterday evening, criticized Halevi, saying that he was asleep. And Halevi, as opposed to taking it on the chin and said, yeah, we did a poor job of responding, whined, and Gallant got up and said, how dare you criticize the IDF? We're out there fighting the terrorists. Not criticizing the IDF. He's criticizing the two buffoons that are leading it. And they deserve it. And they ought to step down, and they ought to stop whining, and they ought to stop complaining when they're criticized for what they have done. They, Israel, miserably. Jews died, not because of Netanyahu, but because of Gallant and Helvetti. That's just the simple truth. Now, I'm not a Netanyahu fan. I unfortunately think that he is the best that Israel has to offer at the moment. He is badly compromised by the right-wing Haredim contribution, the parasites of Israel. And most recently, he even pulled a bill that would have striven to create a compromise on Haradim being drafted. But as you notice, I'm sure the Supreme Court, the High Court, as they call it in Israel, voted unanimously, including conservative justices, to demand that the Haradim stop being parasites and they act like citizens and enter the IDF. Now, there are some who are not Haradim, but are very religious, who said that they won't help Israel because they have no competency. It's true. They have not. They have not been educated. They've been indoctrinated. They can't do math. They have no math skills. They have no language skills. They have no communication skills. They have no technology skills. They know nothing but the Talmud. They're an absolute waste of breath. And they are so demanding in terms of they can't be around women. They can't mix food groups. They can't serve on the Shabbat, even if it means defending God's people. You know, it's interesting that Teruah, which is, and Shavuah, the two big harvests. Who is the operative force in making those harvests possible?
Dod.
And?
Yada.
No.
Yahweh. Yahweh is the power behind
You're right.
It. Dode,
Yahweh is, of
Dode
course,
is the reason for it. And yes, I am a voice heralding it, but the two most important individuals are Dode and Yahweh. What day of the week is the Shavuah harvest and the Teruah harvest?
Shabbat.
This is Shabbat, isn't it?
No.
So what is God doing on the Shabbat?
He's working.
He's working, isn't he? He's working to save his people. So if it's good enough for God to work to save his people on the Shabbat, and you want to tell me that it's not okay for someone to fight to protect Jews on the Shabbat? Who do you think has it right? Yahweh or the rabbis?
No question.
I have never considered Vladimir Putin a bluffer. I don't think that Vladimir Putin says things just to posture.
No,
when Vladimir Putin says that I am going to re-engage intermediate nuclear weapons, I am going to invest in hypersonic nuclear technology, and I am no longer going to pay any attention to the SALT treaties based upon what America has orchestrated in the Ukraine by trying to militarize the Ukraine against Russia. And when he says because of the drones that are being used against the Russian Navy in the Black Sea, that Russia has no choice but to engage NATO in this war. I don't think he's bluffing.
No, I don't either.
And I think it's one of the great disasters in human history. All right, that said, I want to return, unless you have something else you'd like to add to the quick review of the news. I'd like to return to where we were in our review. We were sharing Hosha 5:15. I'll pause for a moment if you guys have an item in the news that you'd like to bring up before we reconvene.
No,
I don't. It wasn't worth mentioning.
Okay. The last statement we read is exceedingly powerful. It is so very different than what the religious have been led to believe. But as I explained last week, when Yahweh reveals something through Hosha, you can trust it. Hosha passes the test, which is in Devarim 18, Deuteronomy 18, with flying colors. He is a bona fide prophet. And Yahweh most certainly is the only bona fide God. So, when they say the following, we need to process this and deal with it through his prophet, Hosea, in first person. He said, I will go away and return to my place, El Makom Ani, to my home. Until they closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness of the eternal testimony. And they seek my presence, responsibly investigating and learning about my appearance. During the time of trouble, Baha'u'llah, that they will approach by earnestly seeking me, longing to learn about the relationship. This was spoken approximately 700 BCE. It's now 2024 CE. Trying to correlate calendars here as I'm reading ahead is what we're going to be talking about. That is about 2,700 plus years. It's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
During almost all of that time, Yahweh had disassociated from Yisrael and Yehudim.
Yes.
He spoke through his prophets to them, once through Dod as Gabriel, through Yirmiyah and Yeshayah, who were contemporaries, and then through Yoel, Zechariah, and Malachi, the last three. I'm convinced that Malachi's testimony dated to 447 BCE, because it would have been exactly 1,000 years after Yahweh began with his first prophet, Moshe, in 1447 BCE. And other than speaking to those five or six men over to his people through them, so indirectly to his people, Yahweh had no interactions with Israel. When the Assyrians came, he didn't stop them. The only time that there was any interaction was when Hezekiah found a copy of the Torah and implemented what it called for, which is the total elimination of religion. He removed all traces of religion within Yehuda and then celebrated Chag Matzah, Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, not doing so just once, but twice. But that was also at this time. Since that time, then nothing. The Greeks came, they were not stopped. Babylonians came, they were not stopped. The Romans came three times, they were not stopped. The Roman Catholics came. The Muslims came. The Ottoman Turks came. The Crusaders. Then in Diaspora, because of Rabbi Akiba, Jews were abused by Europeans, and then specifically by the Nazis, and by Muslims again. Not only didn't the IDF stop the onslaught of October 7th, Yahweh didn't either. And the reason is that he is not engaged with his people. And the reason he is not engaged with his people is his people chose to leave him. Rabbinic Judaism is a poke in Yahweh's face. It is to say that the words of the rabbis and the Talmud supersede Yahweh's instructions and guidance. It is to see that the rabbis are more important than Dod, the Messiah and Son of God. The rabbis are more important than the Shaphat judges of the Lowy Priest, the Kohen. And for God, those are fighting words. So God has a choice. He could either engage in direct opposition to his people, as he did when they created the golden calf on the way out of Mitzrayim, or he could just walk away and ignore them and then return once they came to their senses. He chose the latter. Prayer made to Yahweh by a Jew prior to some 20 years ago when they started listening again. Over that 2,700-year timeout. Not one. So that's a pretty extraordinary statement. I will go away. I'm returning to my place. And he says that he will stay there until his people start to closely examine and carefully consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness of the eternal testimony at Asher Shamar. I don't think, in fact, I would say it's probably certain that prior to Yada Yahwa and this series of books, that no one on planet Earth translated Ad as restoring testimony and the eternal witness. But that's what the word means. No one translated Asher as anything but a reflexive pronoun. But if you look at Asher, it's one of the most comprehensive terms in the Hebrew language. It's a pronoun, a preposition, a verb, a proper noun, a noun. It's got it all going for it. And speaks of a relationship developing and of the benefits of that relationship for those who strive on the proper path to receive them. And Shamar is very often rendered keep, just as Shama is changed to obey. Shama means to listen. Shamar means to observe, which is to closely examine and carefully consider. Does not mean keep, just as Shama doesn't mean obey. So the very message as to how long Yahweh was going to be away is completely missed until somebody closely examines and carefully considers the restoring testimony and the eternal witness. And that did not happen until around 20 years ago. And they seek my presence responsibly, investigating and learning about my appearance. Wa bakash pane ana. Pane is appearance, presence, face. And bakash speaks of desiring something, particularly wanting to meet, to encounter, to learn about. So God said, I'm going away, and you're not going to hear from me or see me or benefit from what I'm going to do until such time as you become not just observant, but you examine what's important. The benefits of the relationship through the restoring witness and eternal testimony. And in the process, seek Yahweh's presence, learning about his upcoming appearance. Then God goes one step further. He says that while that is a step in the right direction, it's not going to be until the time of trouble, Ba-ha-sha'ar, that they are going to approach God, me, speaking in first person, longing to learn about the relationship, Lahim Shakar Ani. They will want to be with me, inquiring about me, while genuinely striving to know me. This is beginning to happen in Yisrael, and is certainly happening with Yehudim and Yisraelites outside of Yisrael. But over the next 2 years, we're going to see this explode in terms of the number of people who are willing to listen to Yah. I was sharing with Kirk and Dave before this program began how something has changed dramatically in this quest to know God and to share who he is, what he's offering, and what he expects from us in return. And that is, during this process, I have always loved translating, learning, thinking, coming to understand, and sharing, particularly his written word and responding with books attributed to understanding his words. That has been my passion. That's my love. Those who know me recognize that you could bring something up, and I'm so focused on what I'm doing that I forget to respond. I love it. What I have not enjoyed nearly as much is the audio programs. For me, they have been mostly a distraction, taking time away from my first love. Now, part of that is that I know Yahweh prefers the written word to the spoken word. But I also know that in today's world, it is the spoken word that draws our attention to the written word. And without the spoken word, the written word goes unnoticed. I also know that because of tone and inflection and the ability to speak extemporaneously and thus from the heart, from our core knowledge, that words can be more impassioned and come across as even more convincing. And this program enables those things to occur. Twice now, in the last month, I have done something I have not done in 20 years, which is to listen to these programs. I don't like the sound of my voice. I'm very critical of the way that it comes across. And I don't like the lack of rigor that encompasses the spoken word compared to the amount of discipline that one can put into written testimony. But we are now about creating what I call talkies, using the term from the 1920s and 30s, of course, when sound was first added to motion pictures. And they became more entertaining because the actors could actually speak and we could hear them fulfilling their roles. Well, both Dee and my wife, Leah, are creating talkies of this program. Leah, in the last week, has taken about 45 minutes of these programs and turned it into a movie. And I listened to it again today, to what she had done. I couldn't walk away. I wanted to get back and to finish my job. I couldn't walk away. We have finally reached the point where I think we are performing at the level Yahweh always expected. His message is powerful. His words are compelling. And they're being delivered in a way that invite his wayward children to do two things, to recognize just how wrong they have been, while at the same time inviting them home. It is the true incarnation of what Teruah represents, this calling out a warning and then sharing the good news. So I think we're at a place and time where we are going to be garnering Yisrael's attention, and that the upcoming Shavua harvest, just 2 years from now, on May 22nd, 2026, is going to be robust. It's going to be particularly pleasing to our God. And so Yahweh was saying that part of the reason that Israelites are going to listen, that first, his message is now being closely examined and carefully considered, pursuant to the way to benefit from the relationship through his restoring testimony, which is the purpose of Yada Yahweh and these programs. But that's compounded by the fact that Jews have their backs up against the wall. The world at large has turned against them. It's not safe to be a Jew anywhere. And it's going to get progressively worse. The attack on October 7th was horrific. And yet the next one will be 100-fold worse. Israel's going to barely survive. There was news earlier this week that Netanyahu is so desirous of being able to tout normalization with Saudi Arabia, which is actually counterproductive.
Yeah.
That he is willing to capitulate on a Fakistanian state, and is going to say so in his address to the U.S. Congress. It is the announcing and the accepting of a terrorist state of Fakistan that is the prophecy that triggers the worst of the time of Jacob's troubles. It is the thing that Yashayah in the 17th and 18th chapter discusses, blames largely on capitulation to the United States, but talks about Israel being thinned at the waist. And when you combined what Yashayah, the prophet, said about this, triggering a flood of Islamic jihadists into Israel, far more than can be stopped, Dode, as Gabriel, not only provided the timing of these events, but also disclosed that this would be a covenant with many. And right now, the world is about 98% in favor of the Islamic terrorists against Israel.
Mm.
When this happens, the time of Jacob's troubles will be so intense that Yahweh is actually going to remove his covenant family on Shavua. So this is where we are, and it is by having their backs up against a wall and having no other alternative that Jews are finally going to accept Yahweh. Now, it's interesting in a way because I've always talked about there being two exoduses. The first was from Mitzrayim, the crucibles of human oppression, both religious, political, military, and economic oppression in Egypt, Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is the plural of Mitzrah, and Mitzrah means to question and to contemplate the aspects of troubles. It's the same root, Sa'ar, as the time of Jacob's troubles. And I've always compared this exodus from Babylon, where Yirmiyah, it's actually Yahweh, speaking through the prophet Yirmiyah, says, come out of her, my people. It is this realization that there will be a second exodus. The second exodus is from Babylon, and you can look at Babylon in any one of three ways, all of which would be accurate. Babylon politically is the United States. Babylon religiously is Christianity, particularly the Roman Catholic Church. Babylon geographically is the realm of Islam. And God is calling his people out of Babylon. And the correlation I want to make is that Yahweh said that the first time that he reaffirmed the covenant with his people was when he took them out of Mitzrayim. And he says that he did that with a firm and resolute hand. In other words, this wasn't about reaching out and hoping that somebody would reach up and accept his hand. He grabbed them and drug them out of town. Because even with their backs up against the wall, the young male boys were being slaughtered and the people were being worked to death.
Yeah.
Even in those circumstances, they had to be dragged out of town. They had no other option, and this was God Almighty offering to free them, and yet he still had to drag them out of town. Yahweh is very clear in saying that his reaffirmation, his renewal of the covenant won't be like that. He ain't going to drag you out of town. You can't come kicking and screaming. You will either choose to come on your own volition or not come at all this time. That's the difference. And so this time, it will still take the same level of pain for Israel to acknowledge that what they have been doing is wrong. You know, we've talked about this so many times, but the colloquial definition of insanity is continuing to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Israel has been doing the same political and religious tricks for 3,000 years. And over 3,000 years, they've had the same results, which have been miserable. If you don't want to be considered insane, stop it. Stop being religious. Stop being political. Reach out to Yahweh. And this time you're going to have to do it of your own volition. But at long last, Yehudim are emerging from their nightmarish pasch, although it is one at a time, each one bringing another with them, opening their eyes, walking away from religion and politics, and becoming observant. And what before those eyes appears but Ad Asher Shamar, the opportunity to examine and consider the way to receive the benefits of the relationship. For this reason, Yada Yahweh was prepared and published. And in this regard, it is telling that the comprehensive rewrites of goddamn religion and Twistianity. Goddamn religion was just finished this week. Twistianity is just beginning. I'm now well into the first chapter of the rewrite. And the completion of Coming Home, Volume 3, and an entire new Volume 4, the final edits of the Yada Yahweh series, and they will all be completed right as the sun sets in Jerusalem on the Shabbat of May 22nd, 2026, the Shavuot harvest. We have been afforded the precise amount of time that we need to accomplish the task that Yahweh has assigned to us. And I'm convinced that when it's all said and done, that Yahweh is going to be pleased with what we have done. Sure, he made it possible. Sure, he provided his seven spirits to inspire and enlighten and embolden us. And sure, he provided all the material through his prophets long ago for us to understand and gave us the opportunity to learn along the way, to correct what we have gotten wrong and to reassure his people based upon what we have learned and gotten right. But nonetheless, Yahweh loves to share credit. And in this case, he's pleased. Now you think of the devotion of not only many members of the covenant family, but most recently one of the outgrowths of Amazon flipping its wig and not understanding that I actually own the copyright to all of Yada Yahweh, having devoted my life 10, 12 hours a day, 6 and 7 days a week for 23 years to creating this material, doing so without a co-author, without a publisher, that I own those rights. I freely share it, but that's my right to do so. And because I've chosen to freely share it online, Amazon says, then you can't prove that you own it. Therefore, we're going to put your account in suspicion. Now, I know that is painful for Jackie, who does all of the work from the time that I finish the books and they have to be edited, to presenting them for publishing at Amazon. And now she's doing the same with Ingram and other backup sources. And it's difficult for her because she has devoted so much time and energy to this. But there is always a silver lining with Yahweh. And in this case, members of the Covenant family are coming to her aid, to our aid, to support Yahweh and Dod and those who are listening now to Yahweh for the first time. And person after person is saying, I want to help. I want to be part of the team that shares what we are learning and improves what we are learning. So there's always a good thing that comes out of all of this. Those who have accepted the conditions of the Bereth, who attend Yahweh's Mikre, and who are guided by the Torah, we will all have a ringside seat for the Great Awakening and the reunion as it plays out in successive events at the commencement and conclusion of the time of Jacob's troubles. And with the first of the final three invitations reaping its harvest just, 3 years, 3.5 years before Yahweh's return, with Dod, the second to last, just 10 days, the last on the very day that God returns. And I think these harvests are successively smaller. Well, this next harvest, the Shavuot harvest, will be of two loaves, spoken of as wheats, plural, which means both Goyim and Yehudim.
Mm-hmm.
The second harvest, Teruah, is of olives. The olives are identified with Yisrael, and they will be Yisrael and Yehudim. And the third is not so much as a harvest as a final awakening of probably 7,000 souls that listen to one of the great communicators of all time, Elia, who will be responsible over a 10-day period for that final group who will look up and reach up to Yahweh in Jerusalem as he returns, and he's going to return with all of us who participated in the Shavuah and even Teruah harvests. The Eth Serah La Yaakov, the time, Eth means time, of Israel's, Yaakov is a synonym for Israel. Troubles are, feminine of Shar, time of Yaakov's troubles, is subsequently explained in the 30th chapter of Jeremiah, which we're going to consider momentarily. Should you wish to mark your calendars and meet with Elia and Yada, they will return and be present on April 4th, 3030. That day is important because it's the first of Abib, year 5997, Yah. That's 7 years prior. That's 3.5 years prior to Yahweh's return.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to serve under the direction of Dod, which we might as well get very comfortable doing because we're going to be doing that for all eternity. So if you don't like Dod, you probably don't want to join us. If you are like me and have a bromance with my brother, then it's going to be wonderful service indeed. I mean, can you imagine being able to serve the Son of God, the man that God said, he's my guy, he's my chosen one, the one that Yahweh anointed with his spirit and with his oil three times. The man that Yahweh chose to be the defender and king of his people. The great lyricist who wrote 100 psalms and proverbs. I can't imagine a better person to serve, particularly since he is so courageous.
Right.
He is so devoted. He's so passionate. He's always willing to lead from the front. And you know, we would call him a Renaissance man. He has it all together. And yet, like us, he's had scars in life that built character. He's made poor decisions like the rest of us. But unlike the rest of us, he earned our eternal respect by becoming our Savior and fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, and Pukkotim. And so the opportunity to serve with a man who is responsible for us being there, I think will be a delight. But understand, it is Dod that we will be serving. It is his kingdom, and we will be living in it. And for those that say, wait a minute, no, it's God's kingdom. No. No, it's not.
Yep.
David, no.
Yeah, is it Yahweh's universe? Absolutely. Did Yahweh make it possible? Certainly. If Yahweh wanted a different outcome, could he have it? By all means.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not what Yahweh wants. And since he's God, he gets what he wants. What he wants is to work with us and through us. And the person he enjoys the most, that he thinks he's the most effective working through, is Dod. He is making Dod king. He built Dod's home, his throne, empowered him, is bringing him back to accomplish this. And frankly, Dod deserves it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no
he's
question.
He's earned it. He's earned it.
Yeah. No, no question.
So, we will all serve under Dod's instruction, even during this final 3.5 hellish years. Addressing the times, and half a time, reference at the conclusion of Daniel to prepare for Yahweh and Dod's return for Yisrael and Yehuda, such that God can restore his relationship with his people. Now, that story is told in the 31st chapter of Yirmiyah, but also in Yashayah, Zechariah, and Malachi. And as we will find out, it's also told in Yoel. Yahweh has been directing his people's attention to what he would subsequently reveal through the Nabi Yirmiyah, Jeremiah, for a very long time. It begins, the word, the Dabar, the message communicated, which to reveal the way to enjoy the benefits of the relationship, Asher, came to exist, Haya, Yirma, Ya'u. Yahweh raises and lifts up, Yahweh teaches and guides to respect and revere Yah, commonly translated or transliterated, Jeremiah. So it's the word which to reveal the way to enjoy the benefits of the relationship that came to exist with Yirmiyahu from Yahweh. And Yisrael, until you learn to appreciate his name, know what his name represents, say it boldly, and are comfortable with it, then you are not a recipient of his message. You will not be part of his family. Yahweh is the Almighty's proper designation, pronounced as instructed by his Torah on his Hayah existence and his role in our Shalom reconciliation as our Eloah, God. Each of those words tell us how to pronounce Yahweh's name, and the pronunciation of each of them is not in question. All to announce, this is what Yahweh, the God of Israel, proclaims, so as to declare, of your own volition, write all of these words, which lead to the proper path to get the most out of life, Asher. I have and will be speaking to you, Dabar El Atah, doing so in a written document so that there is a permanent record. I came on this program saying that my love is written communication. I prefer to read than to listen. I prefer to write than to speak. And part of that is my love for Yahweh. Yahweh prefers written communication. He wants his prophets to write down what he conveys. The Torah is not an oral Torah. It's a written Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Everything the prophets had to say, they put in writing immediately as God was communicating this message to them. The written word endures. It doesn't change. It is reliable. It's verifiable. If you write a prophecy and then make certain that an extant copy of that written text survives, such that when the prophecy is fulfilled centuries or millennia later, then you have proof that what you said was true. But if you say it verbally, and then something happens, you say, see, I told you. It has no validity.
Mm-hmm.
With the written word, we can do as I have done here. We can examine each word, like the bar, the message communicated. We can expand on Asher and know all of what it conveys. We can understand why the prophet was named Yirmeyahu. We can learn to pronounce Yahweh's name. We can understand why he would say that he is the God of Israel. He's the God of the universe, creator God of the world. But he didn't communicate to the entire world. He communicated to and with and on behalf of Israel. He chose one family out of all families to communicate his message and his plan. But when we look at the word Yisrael, we come to understand why he chose this name. And that is because it is like two sides of the same coin. Yisrael describes the people and describes really humankind. On the positive side, we can Yisrael become individuals, Ish, Sarah, who engage and endure with God. Lord, Sarah's name, the mother of the covenant family, is emblazoned in the name Yisrael. So talk about God's love and respect of women. He put a woman's name in the middle of the name of his people, Yisrael. But by the same token, Yisrael also means those who contend and struggle with the Almighty. And so Yisrael has been on both sides of that coin, far more of the embittered who have wrestled with God than those who have accepted and endured engaging with God. But that's the meaning of the name. I can count myself among Yisrael, even if I am not a blood descendant of Jacob, because I have chosen to engage and endure with God. And so can everyone who is listening to this program. Mm-hmm. Because indeed, behold, a time is coming, prophetically reveals Yahweh, when I will return to restore the property and possessions taken during the captivity of my people Yisrael, individuals who engage and endure with God, and Yehuda, the beloved of Yah, declares Yahweh. And then I will restore them, bring them back to the land that for the benefit of the relationship I gave to their fathers, they will receive it as their inheritance. This was fulfilled, and this will be fulfilled. A remnant of Yisrael, Yehuda in particular, did return from Babylon to Yehuda. However, Yisrael was not included. They were lost by that time, scattered by the Assyrians. They had been taken captive, and they had not returned. And they did not return with Yehudim. And they were not given back the land that was stolen from them because they did not possess the northern kingdom. So was there a minor fulfillment of this 2,600 years ago? Yes. But the prime fulfillment awaits. And that is after the world slices even more of Israel away, giving the Fakistanian Muslim terrorists a terrorist state of their own. Yeah, I was going to say, no, I'm giving it back to my people. It's their land. And Yahweh is going to reestablish Yisrael along the borders that he originally intended. It's going to be the inheritance of his people. It's going to be for the benefit of the relationship. It is so that Yisrael can engage again and endure with God along with Yehuda. And part of the reconciliation, which we'll find out in the 31st chapter of Yirmiyah, includes, for the first time, the reunification of Yisrael, the 10 northern tribes, with Yehuda. And it's interesting that Ephraim, or Yisrael in this context, would include 10 of the tribes, and the other two would be Benjamin and Yehuda. Benjamin, God despises. That's the wolf.
Yeah.
It's symbolic of Paul and Christianity. The wolf in sheep's clothing devoured his people. But Yehuda, Yahweh loves. That's what the name means. And the other is the Lowy. And the Lowy will be brought back and re-engaged. While God's disappointed in them, he is going to redeploy them. So this is prophetic of what is going to happen, because the fullness of this has not yet occurred. These are the words which, to reveal the way, Yahweh spoke concerning Yisrael to Yehuda. This is what Yahweh conveyed as we heard the sounds of concern over the terrorists and terrorism when there were no prospects of reconciliation or peace. When the Babylonians attacked Yehuda, they were not terrorists. They did not use the tactic of terrorism.
Right.
They were at that time the most formidable military on the planet. They were disciplined, just as the Assyrians were a brutal people, but disciplined militarily. Just as the Romans, while cruel, were disciplined militarily. Terrorism is the tactic that's deployed by Muslims. It is the tactic, ruah is the Arabic word. It's interesting that ruah is the Arabic word for terror, and it's the Hebrew word for sound the alarm and shout for joy. Nonetheless, it is Muslims who are terrorizing Israel. This is therefore a prophecy of what is to come. He's now speaking of the time of Jacob's troubles when Israel is being terrorized by Muslims. Alas, assuredly, this time will be so different that there never has been anything similar to it. It is the time of Jacob's troubles. And yet from it, he, Jacob, representing Israel, will be liberated and saved. The time of Jacob's troubles is before us. It's the last 7 years before Yahweh returns with Dod. He is returning on October 2nd, 2033, Kippurim, on year 6000 Yah, the 120th Yobel. 7 years prior to that time, we are at Shavuah in 2026. That's how we get to those dates. We are certain of the 2033 date on October 2nd, the fulfillment of Kippurim, because Dod as Gabriel gave us the timeline of precisely when he was going to arrive in Jerusalem to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bekorim, and that was in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE. And we know precisely from the chronologies that Yahweh provided when the cornerstone of Yahweh's covenant home was laid, and that was in year 3000 Yah, 996 BCE, 968 BCE, excuse me. And we know exactly when Dod and Yishak went to Mount Moriah as the dress rehearsal for the fulfillment of Pesach, which was 1968 BCE, which means that Adam and Chawa were escorted out of the garden in 3968 BCE. There is exactly 40 Yobel between these major fulfillments. 40 is the time of completion. The Yobel are the time that all slaves are freed, all debts are forgiven, and the land is returned, and we can return to the land. That is Yahweh's timeline. It wasn't particularly difficult to ascertain, although I think the discipline that was required to prove what I have just shared with you, which Dee, our co-host here, devoted probably 2 years of her waking time, apart from her family, to compose this timeline. She did work with other people, but it is primarily her project. It is available at the Yada Yah site under resources. Yes, a long process. But what it does is affirm exactly what we're sharing with you. And she reinforces it in many ways beyond what I've just shared. It's, by the way, a resource that I use quite frequently when, you know, I don't typically remember what day of the month it was that Dod fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bekorim in 33 CE. So rather than make a mistake, I'll go to the timeline and say, oh, yeah, it was April 4th or whatever it might have been in that particular year. It's good enough for me that it was the 14th of Abib in year 4000 Yah, to speak in Yah's parlance. But for most people to appreciate what that means, we have to correlate Yahweh's calendar with the Roman calendar that is so prevalent today. So this
the value
is assuredly,
of the written word.
So this assuredly is the time that will be so different, unlike anything similar to it. Now, when you think about that for a moment, the Assyrian attack against Israel was so severe that 10 of the 12 tribes were essentially lost. They were hauled out of Israel with nose rings as if they were pigs, in chains, naked. That's pretty horrific.
Okay.
When the Babylonians hauled them away, it was no picnic. When the Greeks came, the Greeks under Alexander and then later under his four generals were arrogant and maniacal. But as bad as they were, the Romans were among the worst people in the history of humanity. They were savages, the way they dealt with the people. Ruthless, arrogant, torturous. And so if you think of the hell that was perpetrated on Jews by the Romans on their three subsequent attacks, crucifixions of hundreds of thousands of Jews, and then hauling most Jews as slaves out of Israel to labor and build that monument to human decadence, the Colosseum, it was pretty bad times. And then the Roman Catholic Church for the next 1900 years relegated Jews to ghettos. They had no rights. They were dehumanized and demeaned. This became even worse when Satan, through Islam, declared war on God's people, beginning with genocide in Arabia against the Jews who had been there as a result of both the Assyrians and the Babylonians having hauled them away. They were exterminated by the Muslims who declared war on them. And then you have the Ottoman Turks and then the Crusaders. All of Europe turned against God's people. The Nazis were especially torturous, but you know, you had the Spanish Inquisition. It was hell. It's hard to imagine times worse than the Spanish Inquisition perpetrated by the Roman Catholic Church. And then, of course, the most horrific act, maybe scar in all of human history, is the Holocaust, where the Nazis and their European collaborators murdered 6 million Jews, 1 million of them young children. It's pretty horrific.
It is.
What occurred on October 7th in Israel was a massacre. Women and children were tortured to death. They were raped. They were hauled into hell as captives, as prizes. And in hell, they were tortured. It's pretty horrific.
Yeah.
And yet God is saying that what is going to come makes all of that look trivial by comparison. Never in the history of human events will things be as bad as they're going to be for Jews in Israel over these next 9.5 years, particularly during the time of Jacob's troubles, which is from 2026 through 2033. It doesn't matter where you are. It'll be exceedingly difficult to be a Jew as the world rages against God's people. That's not my opinion. It's God's testimony. He was not predicting the future 2,700 years ago. He witnessed it. This is not a
right.
prediction. It's future history. That's the interesting
right.
thing about being a spiritual being, akin to light. Because as a spiritual being, time simply is, which means Yahweh at any moment can see the future. He can witness what our bad choices to do. And then he can report back in our past what he saw happen. The bad choices of humans in general and his people specifically going to lead to the time of Jacob's troubles, the time of Israel's troubles. Sha'ar doesn't mean just trouble. It's a period of anguish and distress, of adversity, when the nation will be narrowed, reduced in size, and oppressed. The word serves as the root of Mitzrayim, and you know what happened to Jews in Mitzrayim. This will be worse. And while God isn't the cause of this, he is going to be the solution this time. Not for every Jew, certainly not for every goy, but he will intervene on behalf of his people in the end, and he will conduct two harvests between now and then, plus celebrate a final return of his people. The Shavua harvest and the Teruah harvest will be God's specific actions in removing his covenant family and a reunited Yisrael and Yehuda on a timely basis. But this is where humanity is headed. This is where the Galants and the Helvetis, the Ganses, Lapins, this is where all of them, the Pids, are taking the world and to God's people. This is the consequence of the Bidens, the consequence of the United Nations, the consequence of progressives, the consequence of the satanic religion of Islam, the consequence of the plague of death, which is Christianity. And the victims are going to continue to be Jews. And yet, God says, the silver lining, this time, I'm not going to allow it to happen. I'm going to liberate and I'm going to save my people. Yasha is a beautiful word. It is the word in the middle of Yashaya's name. Yasha means to deliver from harm's way, to liberate, freedom, ultimate freedom, from human control, from human bondage, deliverance, freedom, emancipation, but also salvation. God's going to save his people from themselves. And this is our message. This is our mission. We want every person the world over to have the opportunity to hear what God has to say. Now, we recognize those who are overtly political and overtly religious aren't going to listen, and that's just fine with us. We don't want them anyway. But those who are open and receptive to Yahweh, those who are not controlled by their politics or their religion, and who are willing to invest the time to learn, have the good judgment to respond to what they hear, what they read, to have this opportunity to choose Yahweh and to come home. And those who do, Yahweh is saying that he's going to liberate and save them. We have God's promise on this, and he has never welched on a promise, and he never will. I guess we're not supposed to say welched anymore because it is derogatory to the Welsh, but not part of my vocabulary. And it shall happen in that day, prophetically declares Yahweh, that the vast array of spiritual implements, the Saba, that I will break this yoke, this means of control and manipulation from your neck, and I will pull off and tear away your bonds and shackles. Those who are illegitimate and unauthorized, those falsely claiming authority, who are foreigners from a distant place advocating that which is improper, will no longer make him work for them. Instead, they will serve with Yahweh, their God, and with Dod, their king and counselor, whom to reveal the way to the benefits of the relationship, I will raise up and establish for them. That's the message. It's so clear. It's there in writing. How has everyone missed it? God is saying that he is going to liberate his people, and just as the Christians and the Muslims and the progressives and everybody else has tried to burden them. You look at Israel trying to defend itself against Islamic terrorists, and they can't even call their enemy. They're accused of genocide, and yet they're feeding them. They're risking their own sons and daughters rather than just bomb them into oblivion, which they could do. They're being held to a standard that no one in the history of humanity has ever met, including those who are accusing. It's time that all of this is removed from Jews. that they return to the status of being the chosen people, the brightest and the best among us. And this is what Yahweh is promising. So if you are anti-Semitic, if you're opposed to Jews, understand that you are what God is tearing away and discarding, breaking and shattering. It's your bonds and shackles that will cease to exist. It is those who oppose Israel, progressives, Muslims, many Christians, politicians around the world. God is claiming that you are the illegitimate ones. You are the unauthorized ones. You're the ones who are falsely claiming authority. And you are the ones who are advocating that which is improper. But you are no longer going to have any influence on my people. They're not going to work for you. They're not going to show up in your little courtroom and plead with you. No. They're going to work with Yahweh. Now, that might, you might say, wait a minute, I thought that heaven was, you know, lounging on puffy couches and eating bonbons.
Not forever.
Sorry. Sorry to bust your bubble, but no.
Gardens take work.
Yes, when Yahweh spoke to Adam in what was paradise, the Garden of Eden, a great, great joy, he says, we're going to work this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not working, if you're not contributing, your life is meaningless.
Yep.
You know, we all have this opportunity. I give up before the sun. I come into my study, and I begin to work on Yahweh's testimony and dedicate myself to learning so I can inform his people. It's work. It's one of the great joys of life. It gives life value and meaning. And Yahweh knows it, which is why he says that his people are going to work with him, but not just with him. Whose name was placed here?
Dode.
His beloved, the returning king, the Messiah, the Son of God, our Savior. We will be working with and serving Abad, serving Dode. He is our Malach. He is the king and counselor who is going to reveal the way to the benefits of the relationship that Yahweh is specifically going to raise up. So how could you be a religious nincompoop among Jews and be a messianic among Jews and not know who your Messiah is, when God said it right here?
Yeah,
very clear.
The one that's returning to lead Israel is Dode, and he just happens to be the one that Yahweh announced as the Messiah. How could you be so lost as to be one of the 2 to 3 billion Christians and pretend that this misnomer Jesus was a Christ and therefore a Messiah and that he's the King of Kings and his returning, when God says specifically, it's Dode. How does that work? You think that God doesn't know his names? He doesn't know his son's name? He doesn't know the Messiah's name? He doesn't know the man whom he is bringing back to be king? He doesn't know his name? His name appears 1,100 times in the Torah and prophets, and yet you don't think God knows it? Or knows the difference between Dode and Jesus? Oh, but replacement theology, whatever God said to Dode, it really applies to Jesus, because Paul told us so.
Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, but where did Yahweh say so? Yahweh didn't say anything of the sort.
Nope.
And to steal what belongs to others is bad. To steal what belongs to God's son is really stupid.
Yep.
I mean, Christianity is criminal.
It is.
It steals what belongs to God's Son. You think God's going to accept you under those circumstances? You stole his title. You stole his relationship. And then you had your mythical misnomer, Barry, what he did as our Savior, claiming that this myth somehow saved you by dying. You even had Jews kill him. You're out of your ever-loving mind. Then, Yaka, my co-worker, you will have nothing to fear. Yahweh reveals in advance of it occurring. This will occur beginning at 6:22 p.m., sunset in Jerusalem, on October 2nd, 2033, on Yom Kippurim. Whether you're ready or not, this is what's going to happen. Yahweh is raising Dodd to serve as king. God is saying, you will not be confused or dismayed, Yisrael, because behold, I will save you, delivering you, Yasha again, along with your offspring, from the realm of their exile and captivity. And Jacob will change and return and be at peace and put at ease with no one troubling him. So what is it that enables God to rescue, to deliver and save Israel, Jacob? Said it right there.
Mm-hmm.
You will change. God's not going to change. The means to be part of the covenant aren't going to change. The first condition of the covenant is to walk away from Babel, from the confusion of religion and politics, from the family of man. God's not changing the conditions of the covenant. If you want to be part of it, Yisrael, you need to change and you need to disassociate from religion and politics and from human customs. All there is to it. Simple, profound, and in your interest. Being religious and political has gotten you nothing but trouble, and that trouble is going to be exacerbated. The answer is to change. The approach you've been using for the last 3,000 years hasn't worked. This one will. Change. Accept Yahweh, and no one will trouble you again. For I am with you, prophetically declares Yahweh, to liberate and save you. Indeed, I will engage and act to bring an end to all of the foreign nations and institutions among whom I have scattered and dispersed my name and reputation. You will be the exception because I will not act in a way to cause you to fail or to perish. So after Yahweh in Yashi in Hosea 5 says, I'm sorry, I can't tolerate you anymore. I'm going back to my home. I will not return and reengage until you become observant again. You start paying attention and closely examine and carefully consider the restoring testimony and the means to the relationship. And then Israel goes through this terrible time, worse than any in the nation's history, and people start listening again. And Yahweh says, you change. You start listening. You start responding to my covenant and my Moed Mikre, my name, my son, my testimony. and I will rush to you with open arms. Listen to me, and I will protect you. Come to me, and I will embrace you. The promise from God. Take him up on it. He is reliable. He came to me 22, almost 23 years ago. It was a Tarua, 2001, a few days after 9/11. I didn't know his name. But I had disassociated myself from religion and politics. I had been very political and exceedingly religious, and I had begun to question both. And Yahweh approached and asked if I would be willing to work with him, and we negotiated a deal and have been doing it ever since. And what I can tell you is he is an absolute delight to work for. Nothing more rewarding, nothing more enjoyable, nothing more productive, nothing more uplifting, enlightening, enriching than to work with Yah. And one of the advantages of working with Yah is that he protects you so that there is no downside. There are thousands of death threats from Muslims, and yet I live in total peace, comfort, and joy with no concern whatsoever for my life or my family, because Yahweh has promised protection. I know that no matter what happens in the world tomorrow, my life is going to be meaningful because I work with Yahweh. And it is true for all of us in the covenant.
Yes.
You know, we have our aches and pains in life because without them we'd have no character. Without them we'd have no appreciation for all that Yahweh has endured from his people. So we have our aches and pains.
Yeah.
And yet life is marvelous. Every day is a grand adventure. Working with brilliant mind and the history of humanity, or a history of the world, the universe, working with his son, working with someone who enjoys teaching, who loves to be productive, who is willing to give far more than we could possibly give. You know, it's like we're shoveling away with a hand trowel, and he's got an excavator. But multiply that by a billion fold, and it's kind of the nature of this relationship.
Yeah.
Yahweh is exceedingly generous. And one of the ways we know that is through Dod, mm-hmm. whom Yahweh clearly loves. And Dod did some dunderhead stuff. And yet, from Yah's perspective, Dod was the best. He is the best of us. And Yahweh loves him dearly and is providing the entire universe to be his kingdom. So we don't have to be perfect for God to use us in powerful ways. We don't have to be perfect for Yahweh to be pleased with our contribution. This goes on to say, instead, I will provide instructions for you in the way to execute good judgment regarding the means to resolve disputes such that you are found innocent and are not punished. And I will not banish you nor leave you destitute. By working together with his son, Dod, and fulfilling Pesach and Matzah, together they came up with a way for us to be found innocent. And so it's interesting that in the previous statement, Yahweh is announcing that he's working with Doad and that we will be working with Doad. And the next statement, he says that he has found a way to make us appear innocent. And these things are correlated because it is Doad's sacrifice as part of Chag Matzah, where on Pesach he surrendered his Peshar, corporal body, to serve as the Pesach El. But it was on Matzah, which is the corruption of yeast that represents religious and political guilt, that this was all removed from us and taken by Doad's nefesh soul into Sheol and deposited there, never to be seen again. So if everything that that guy Kirk has ever done that's bad was removed and taken into Sheol, a black hole, and deposited there, then Kirk's looking pretty pretty shiny, isn't he?
Pretty definitely.
Same thing is true with every covenant member. Because of what Doad did on Matzah, removing our guilt and taking it with him into Sheol to deposit it there, we appear perfect in Yahweh's eyes. We are innocent. That's why Doad himself looks so perfect to God. It's why all of the covenant family look perfect to God. Because we are perfect because our guilt has all been removed and taken a place where it can never be seen again. And what a joy it is to work in an environment where everything that you do that is positive is celebrated, and every mistake you made is vanishes and is ignored, ceases to exist.
Yeah. I'm relieved.
Yeah, ultimate emancipation. We're emancipated from the worst of ourselves so that we can celebrate the best of ourselves.
Like a
this is God's plan. And he carried it out with Doad, which is why he included Doad in the previous statement. Since Yahweh has agreed not to talk directly with his people, per his people's request, he has chosen Yada to deliver these instructions. And as is God's preference, they're in writing, and all of it is freely available at yadayah.com because of the work of so many covenant members, and the website itself now is put together by David, orchestrated in large part by Jackie, with many people now making contributions to it. This takes us, of course, to the preeminent event in human history. And we'll share this and probably rejoin at this point next week. But now that we are in the archive part, the recorded but not broadcast part of this program, I'm going to share what Yahweh said in Yirmiyah 31:31, where the ultimate event in human history, something even more magnificent than Doad's fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, or of the Shavuah or Teruah harvest, is going to happen. It is on our horizon. And this is what Yahweh is discussing at this point. He says, behold, a time is coming. Yahweh reveals well in advance of it occurring. Well, I will enter into and cut Karat with the house and family of Yisrael, and with the house and family of Yehuda, beloved of Yah, meaning Jews. Yisrael would be Israelites. A restored and renewed covenant, Bereth. Now, from this line, Christians mistakenly say, see, New Testament, right there. Wait a minute. Are you out of your ever-loving minds? The same phrase. He didn't say this was going to be with a bunch of goy as part of a religious community called a church. What part of this can't you read? You just want to pick two words out and say, hey, renewed covenant. Well, that must be us. And remove it entirely from the context. We've just been reading in Yirmiyah 30, the time of Jacob's trouble, and Yahweh saying, I'm going to save my people. And then he begins this by saying, behold, a time is coming, Yahweh reveals in advance of it occurring, when I will enter into and cut with the house of Yisrael and the house of Yehuda. I don't see goy in there.
I don't see church in there.
I don't see church in there. I don't see religion in there.
Mm.
I see no New Testament in there.
I don't either. It's weird.
Weird, huh? Boy. It's with Yisrael and Yehuda. That's with whom the covenant was made and through whom it will be reestablished and renewed. The word Yahweh used is kadesh. It means repaired, reaffirmed, renewed, restored. That's what it means. A covenant isn't a testament. A covenant isn't a religion. The covenant is from the Hebrew word bereth. In case you were a religious dunderhead and not very bright, and you say, oh, I don't know about that bereth thing, why not look at the preface to both Yisrael and Yehuda? What does it say? It says bereth. Yisrael, and Beeth, Yehuda.
Oh.
And there's nobody on planet Earth that doesn't know, who has any idea of the Hebrew language, who doesn't know that Beeth means family and home. And so Bereth is one letter removed, one letter added to family and home. And what's that letter, Kirk?
Rosh.
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 And how is the Rosh grown? Grown. Now, I speak really good now. How was the Rosh grown?
Grown is a head looking from right to left and looking towards the left, going in the right direction. The engaging the mind, engaging the eyes to see and read and the ears to hear. Shama. Shamar and Torah. Yeah. That's the start.
The reason the person is looking to the left is that Hebrew is written right to left. In other words, he's not looking at where he has been because where he has been isn't good. He's looking to where he's going, which is good.
Walking away. Yeah.
And so the Hebrew letters all have this slant, but not all, but the vast majority of them do them. And they lean either to the right or to the left, and we can learn a great deal about them by the way that the letters, each letter is facing. But in this case, the only thing that is different between Beeth, family and home, and Bereth, familial covenant relationship, is the Rosh, which is an observant person. Eyes to see, ears to hear, on a mind to process it all, and then share what they have come to understand. That's a Rosh.
Point, yeah.
And so an observant and thoughtful individual is in the midst of the family, is what covenant means. And think about the word, too. It starts with a Beeth. The letter itself means family.
Yes.
It's drawn as a family home with one way in, one door. It's interesting. The doorway to this particular home is facing up. And it also is drawn so that it leans to the left. The way that the Hebrew alphabet was, or words are written from right to left, to wherever it's going. And the next letter is a Rosh, the observant individual. Following that is a Yod. The Yod is actually, used to be called a Yod, which is hand in Hebrew. And hand doesn't just mean this contraption at the end of our wrists. It is, it means the influence. It speaks of what we do, how we engage, how we act, how we influence those around us. The Yod is particularly important because it's the first letter in Yahweh's name. It is the first letter in Yisrael. It's the first letter in Yahud and Yahudem. Yahweh's name begins with a hand. And there are four more hands in his name because the two hays are two people looking up and reaching up to God. Five hands, just as there are five fingers on each of our hands. Just as there are five conditions and five benefits of the covenant. This is what Yahweh was trying to convey to us. And so you look at Bereth, and so it's a family home, an observant individual, the home of God. All brought together with the Teth at the end, this mark and signature of God. Pretty good word.
Yeah.
But at the very least, understand that the only difference between Be'eth and Bereth is an observant individual in the midst of God's family. Or, said in other words, if you wish to be part of God's family, be an observant individual. So, behold, the time is coming, Yahweh reveals well in advance of it occurring, when I will enter into and cut through separation, karat, with the house of Yisrael, of those who engage and endure with God, and with the family and home of Yahudah, the household of those beloved by Yah, a restored and renewed Kadash Bereth, familial covenant relationship. Oh, now the next line. Christians just have a field day with until they have to ignore the end of the statement and what comes next and what came before. But nonetheless, there's one word that they like and they ignore all the rest. It will differ. Ah, they like that word.
Mm-hmm.
From the covenant, which to reveal the way to the benefits of the relationship, I entered into karat, cut through separation, with their fathers. On the day I firmly took them by the hand and with overwhelming intent overpowered the situation, Chazak, to bring them out of the realm of the crucibles of oppression. So to this point, it's different in one way and at one time. He didn't say it's different than the covenant that he cut with Abraham, the father of the covenant. He didn't say that it was different than the covenant that he reaffirmed with Yishak or Jacob, did he? No, he said it was different than this very moment in time. We talked about this earlier in the program. What is that moment in time? It's when Yahweh said, I either rescue my people now or there are no people. It's over for them. They will be devoured within the crucibles of human religious and political oppression in Mitzrayim as slaves. And yet, because they did not know Yahweh, they did not trust Yahweh, and because they were so irascible, as we can see from the way they acted during the Exodus, Yahweh wasn't much for free will at that moment. He recognized that he needed to drag them out kicking and screaming. It was the only hope for the salvation of humankind. There would be no doubt if he didn't do it. There would be no Torah if he didn't do it. There'd be no prophets if he didn't do it. There'd be no salvation, no hope for humanity if he didn't do it. People were not deserving, but he knew it was important, and so he did it. He grasped them firmly by the hand, and he yanked them out of Mitzrayim. So what's different? He is not going to yank you out of Babel. Come out of my people is a request, not a demand. You this time must choose. No one comes kicking and screaming. No one gets dragged out of religion. You leave it. You return to Yahweh on your own volition based upon what you have learned and choose to accept or not at all. That is the one difference this time. You got it? Because it's important. And Yahweh wasn't done. He said, relationally, they broke my covenant. Although we were married, Yahweh reveals through his prophet. For this reason, this is the covenant, which to enjoy the benefits of the relationship, Asher, I will cut through separation, establishing with the house of Yisrael. Yehuda does not mention this time because they're incorporated into the whole of Yisrael. After that, and then without hesitation, that means in our immediate future, prophetically declares Yahweh, I will provide placing my guidance within them. Torah Ani, my Torah teaching, instructions, and directions. Ba Kareb Hem, in their inner midst, in their inner person, such that it's part of the fabric of their lives. Oh, how in the hell can you have a Talmud or a New Testament when the restoration of the covenant upon Yahweh's return is the integration of the Torah? Yahweh is personally placing his Torah inside of all of us who choose to return to him. Under that basis, you're absolutely wasting your time and you're disrespecting God to think of, to speak of, to uphold a New Testament or a Talmud. This relationship is being restored from the New Testament and the Talmud and the damage they have done.
Mm-hmm.
It is the Torah which is being reaffirmed so that those who accept God's teaching can be restored into the covenant relationship. And so that we will be properly guided forevermore, the Torah is being put inside of us. And thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is also different than what has existed previously. When Yahweh took the children of Israel and dragged them out of Mitzrayim, he conveyed his Torah through Moshe and gave it to his people. They could choose to listen to it or reject it. They could choose to incorporate it into their lives and have it guide their steps, or they could reject it, ignore it. It was there to improve their lives or for them to completely ignore.
Nice.
That is not the case going forward. So for free will, God had to make his teaching and guidance available to us, but let us choose whether we wanted to accept it or not. By the time that the covenant is renewed, everyone will have chosen, that has survived, will have chosen Yahweh, will have chosen to work with Dod. We will have made our choice to be Torah observant. We will have accepted the conditions of the covenant. We will have embraced the benefits of God's familiar relationship. We will have capitalized upon each of the Moed Mikre. Yahweh will be our God. Dod will be our King and Savior. We will be members of the covenant family. And so we have made our choice, and our choice will be to have God's guidance and teaching be incorporated into our very lives. And so now that we've made our choice, he can do what he could not do previously without violating our free will, because we have chosen this. But beyond that, God is going to elevate us so that we become more like him. He's a seven-dimensional construct. We are three-dimensional. Each increase in dimension is an infinite increase in capability. We have zero chance of surviving just the change from three-point-something dimensions stuck in the ordinary flow of time as we are to being liberated in time, plus the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimension. We couldn't handle, none of us, even being elevated to the fourth dimension without having God's guidance. And so he's going to share with us how we can work together, how we can be productive, how we can enjoy our lives and still be safe in this vast universe, how we can travel to the furthest galaxy and enjoy what is occurring there without endangering ourselves and others. So his Torah guidance and teaching will be literally integrated into our lives. But by saying this, by saying these two things, that he is not going to grab us and overpower us, and he's going to place his Torah literally inside of us, all religion is negated, and we are relegated to the way it was at the beginning. We can choose to be with God or not. But if we want to be with him, it is on his terms, and those terms do not include being religious or political.
Right.
Then God has another statement here where he says, and integrate it into their ability to make decisions, I will write it. I will be their God, and they shall be my family.
Yeah.
That makes you almost want to tear up and cry with joy.
Thanks.
Yeah, and integrate it into their ability to make decisions, I will write it. I will be their God, and they will be my family. The first line is Wa'al Lebhem. And so if you don't know the mindset of Hebrew, you would say, then I shall place it. There's actually no word for place here. And upon their heart is what would be a literal translation. But heart in Hebrew doesn't mean what heart means in English. Heart means in English emotions, feelings. But that's not what it means in Hebrew. It's the liver that is the source of emotions and feelings in Hebrew. The heart was the center of judgment, our ability to make good decisions. It is how we are motivated once we know and understand. It's our passion to do the right thing. Our character, all derived from executing good judgment. And so God is saying that I'm integrating it, Allah, into their ability to make good decisions.
Yeah.
And then Kathab again. You know, it's Yahweh has a preference for writing. look at life.
Yeah.
Look at life. Life is a direct result of a written alphabet. Now, Yahweh's alphabet for life is a three-dimensional alphabet. I mean, that's infinitely more complex than a alphabet that is presented in two dimensions. So DNA is a three-dimensional alphabet with far more variations and shadings and coloring. But it's an alphabet. It is a written code that conceives and orchestrates and differentiates life. And so here Yahweh says, he's not speaking it into our hearts. He's writing it into our hearts. His preference is for the written word because it is reliable. It is enduring. And the result of this isn't that we get to lay on couches and eat bonbons. Nope. It's because the result is that we are part of God's family. And as part of God's family, he is our Heavenly Father. We are his children. And that means that Dod, the king, is our brother. That means, Dee, we are brother and sister.
I'm happy
we
for
are
it.
All, yeah, we're all part of the same family.
I'm good.
I'm good
me
with
too.
That.
I got some great brothers.
What family are we part of? God's.
Noah's.
Yahweh's. You know, all of us will have a new last name. Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. Danielle.
It's so fun that for just a host of reasons, a long, long, long time ago, over 20-some-odd years ago, I chose Yada as a nom de plume to write as a way to be it's anonymous
yeah.
and convey, and then I chose Yahweh as the name for the book, Yada Yahweh, to know Yahweh. And come to find out all of these years later, that's...
You beat you to it.
That's my name.
Yada, you've got 40 seconds left, just letting you know.
Well, we've reached a perfect place to conclude this program. Yahweh's promise that he is going to write his Torah directions inside of us so that we, as a result, become part of his family. He is our God. We are his family. There is nothing better than this, and this is what Yahweh, our God, is offering to his people. May Yahweh bless and have a wonderful Shabbat. Look forward to being with you this time next week. Good night.
You too. Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Hey, you like good stories, right? Well, there's one you just have to experience for yourself. A city with heart and soul, spirit and light, about a city where everywhere you look, you catch glimpses of a bright, shining movement. In the photos along the walls of local eateries, in the voices and sounds reverberating through the music venues, and on college campuses and in the Civil Rights Museum. It's the story of Jackson, Mississippi. See how the city with soul shines at LetItShineJXN.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.